Boy, Kira, I just want to welcome you to the show. I'm really excited to have you on, and I've been looking forward to talking to you for a couple of weeks now. And I know we've connected back and forth on Instagram. And before we really get started, kind of in your story and everything, and I'd love for you to just go ahead and introduce yourself to our listeners and our audience.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. Been looking forward to it too. I'm definitely excited to be here and talking about fitness and how this has impacted my journey with chronic illness. And that is basically what I am an advocate for, is chronic illness and how fitness is important with it. And I'm also a certified Reiki practitioner, so bringing in energy healing and really focus on that mind, body, spirit connection is much what I am all about.
Awesome. I love that. So you said you're an advocate for fitness for like chronic illness, no matter what that may be, where people are kind of dealing with it and been diagnosed with something along that lines that fit into that category. How has that been going for you, and how did you kind of get into that?
So I was 19, so about like 7 years ago, I became very mysteriously ill and nobody knew what was wrong. But I was pretty much like unable to walk and all sorts of neurological symptoms with that. Turned out to be a very severe case of Lyme disease and co-infections, along with some other chronic illnesses that just hadn't been diagnosed yet in my life. And with that, mainly that losing the ability to walk and being so bedridden, I felt like I had lost a big part of myself, which was being an athlete and being involved in fitness. And I didn't know how to get it back. It felt very scary to try to bring exercise back when it seemed to make my symptoms so much worse. So I really kind of did a lot of reflection and a lot of prayer and meditation to find a way to feel safe doing it again and really just put together my own sort of program where I focused on that spiritual part of fitness first, being very connected to the breath and what your body is feeling. And through mindfulness, while working out, I found that I was able to gain back a lot of those abilities that I thought I had lost.
Yeah, that's interesting. You talk about mindfulness, right? And putting that like spiritual awareness into fitness, which I think a lot of people don't understand how important that actual concept is to get into it. I just took because I'm in a physical therapy program, and one of our classes was integrative pain science. And that was one thing we talked about was mindfulness and like how breathing and other things really can amplify that pain or even decrease it. And so what has been your experience with implementing that with like, yourself and then also clients you work with?
I think it is definitely something, like you said, a lot of people just don't realize how important it is. I know I definitely didn't when I used to work out. I never really was thinking about how my body really felt, other than like, oh, I feel sore after I do this, but not actually feeling like the muscles activate and what is working and really feeling that. And so it actually made me feel more comfortable and safe doing it because I can. And more attuned to what, like, I not waiting till it really hurts before stopping. Like, okay, I know this is starting to be a problem. And teaching people how to really listen to their body and feel all those different stages before it gets to that, this hurts too much, or now I'm in a flare up. And I think that guidance gives people a lot of confidence when they're dealing with a chronic illness or a disability that they might not have had if they were never taught how to feel for those things and what to look for.
What's kind of your process for someone that you're dealing with as a chronic illness?
Definitely a lot of focus on breathing in the beginning. I think that when we really tune into our breath, it helps us feel that awareness of everything that's going on and just working from head to toe and getting just aware of what our bodies actually feel like when we're just sitting here. Because we don't really pay much attention to it, but we can always feel ourselves even when we're not like actively thinking about it. And so bringing that awareness and just noticing what hurts, mainly without any judgment or criticism towards ourselves about it, and trying to be as neutral as possible about the pain that they might be in, and then working up slowly. So I have different levels of what I do with my chronically fit workouts, and they go from zero, which is for when you are just starting out or completely bedridden, totally laying flat. Everything is lying down. There's a lot of focus on just muscle holds and contractions and releases to just slowly start to build up those muscles again, but also continuing that awareness. And then seated and adapted workouts, and then back up to like the top of the level, which is where we're working out pretty much as a normal person would be doing in the gym, but really still trying to pay attention to any body cues that, you know, maybe we need to modify something or slow down a little bit.
Yeah, that's incredible. I love how you're bringing awareness to it, right? We've talked about the mindfulness, but bringing that awareness to it, not even just when working out, but like you said, just like sitting here. And so how did you come up with the levels of the exercises that you have, right? Because I think it's four levels that I remember what I read correctly. And it's like zero, like you said, is laying down and kind of the isometrics and hold exercises. Then four is kind of like the actual strength and maybe conditioning stuff. How did you develop that?
Based out of necessity for myself, having a dynamic disability means that every day I don't really know what my day is going to look like with how I'm feeling. So there's some days where I am totally stuck in bed and I need to be able to still do movements and exercise to keep the blood flowing while I'm stuck in bed. And then the next day I could be, you know, able to go for a walk for several miles. And so just the range of abilities, which is, I know, something a lot of people with chronic illnesses experience, and those invisible disabilities, it changes so much on a daily basis. So I felt that having a range of different workout levels with different modifications makes it feel like, okay, even though I'm feeling this way, I still know what I'm able to do on days that I feel like this.
So was it like a little trial and error kind of thing, or over time it was kind of bad and you started reading like educational resources and other things?
Absolutely. So pretty much a combination of both. So when I first wanted to really dive into fitness again after getting sick, I tried to be where I was before and do the same workouts that I used to do. And I just kept hitting like a brick wall of being like, okay, I'm feeling so much worse. And I realized then that I needed to adapt what I was doing. And so I started watching a lot of videos of like fitness instructors and ways that you could modify. And at that time, I also started going to physical therapy as well. And so I brought in a lot of recommendations from my physical therapist to learn about how to adapt workouts.
They're interesting. It's crazy how adaptive everything can become, which I know you've experienced that yourself and have seen it firsthand, which is, it still amazes me. Like, I get excited about all of it.
Me too. So I used to be, very briefly, I majored in occupational therapy in college before I changed my major, but it was such an enlightening few months of school where I just never thought about everything that goes into moving any part of your body. And I just find occupational therapy amazing that way, and that there are so many ways that we can accommodate ourselves and make adaptations for what we need. And at that time, since this is what I was trying to do, I was like, well, why don't I apply this and put it towards my workouts and figure out ways that I can modify them so that I am still working the same muscle groups and getting the cardio in, even though I'm sitting down.
Yeah, and that's crazy that you mentioned that you're going to occupational therapy school. That's really incredible. I didn't even know that. I never would have known that until you said something. That's really awesome. So kind of rewind a little bit, because as you were telling your story, you know, you were talking about the levels of the exercise and like some days you're stuck in bed and then some days you can go walk a mile or you maybe run 3 miles. How do you, one, deal with that frustration of kind of the rise and fall or the valley as a roller coaster of that? And then over time, have you learned like when those days might be coming that you're going to be more in bed than you are going to be able to do things?
It was a long process, and I'm still giving myself a hard time about it sometimes, because when you have those good days, you just want them to keep going. And so it definitely still feels frustrating, but just trying to remember that there, you know, the good days come and cycle through, just like those days stuck in bed. And it been a trial by error trying to keep, it's always recommended that chronic illness patients keep a log of their symptoms, looking for patterns. So a lot of things tend to go through cycles of, you know, weeks, days, months, or maybe if you're doing a certain activity or have a certain stressor during one part of the year, you can kind of predict and plan out a little bit. Like I know this time of year with the change in the weather and the holidays, it's a lot more stress and I can expect that in the month of December. And so I try to add more pacing into my schedule. So I might not be doing heavy like lifting workouts during that time, but focusing more on like yoga and Pilates and things that are a little more gentler.
Yeah, I never would have thought about that, journaling your symptoms to like really see these patterns to kind of help you focus. So like you said, I mean, granted, you said it's been years to accumulate that knowledge and it's something you had to do. And I'm kind of curious, do you think it helps you kind of give control over your symptoms and, you know, the chronic illness?
I think it does. I am definitely in a much better situation now than I was in the beginning. Back then, I had to take time off of school. I had to leave my job. I really wasn't socializing at all. Whereas now, you know, I've graduated. I'm holding a full-time job. I am making time for friends and family. So I feel like I have a much better control over it. And I think that giving that patience to yourself if you're going through it, because it is hard, like looking back, like in the moment, I'm like, it doesn't feel like anything's changed. But when I look back from the beginning, I can see that growth. And then it is encouraging to know that giving yourself the time, like you said, to kind of accumulate that knowledge of yourself and your own patterns, it does pay off.
So how does it feel to go from that and like learning everything to trial and error, getting kind of the educational stuff? Then you have your occupational therapy education, you know, the stuff from there that you learned, to now you're helping people with chronic illnesses and you're kind of guiding them.
It feels amazing. It feels amazing because I know that I couldn't have gotten to this point without other people who have taught me and were positive influences in the same way. And so it feels really good to get to start to give that back and help other people. And anytime somebody tells me like it was so helpful for them, it feels incredible.
So what's been your most memorable experience since you started working with clients?
I would say that there was one person that I had connected with through Instagram, and she has POTS, so postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, where it's, I'm not sure how familiar you are with it, but when you kind of change positions, that heart rate can spike up. There can be a lot of dizziness or fainting, and it can be very, very scary for someone with POTS to try to start a workout program, because just going from sitting to standing up can cause a huge increase in symptoms. And so when she started watching my workout videos and told me about how she has been able to really start doing cardio again, whereas she had been too afraid to before, it was very encouraging and made me want to focus even more on that category, because I think that that is one that I am seeing, at least I have quite a community on Instagram with people who have POTS, and having those symptoms myself too, that was one where like, I used to not be able to run because of it. Now I am able to run again by following my own plan and working on those stages and building up and building up. So it felt really good to be able to help her. And then of course, then that just grows and she tells somebody, and then I was able to help more people from her.
What was like the deciding factor to start that journey into working with clients?
I had a friend who was very encouraging, and she said, you know, I really think you could be helping people. Like, it's great that it's working for you, but you can help other people with it too. And so it was really her motivating me that took that risk.
Well, I'm glad you took it, because then I won't be able to talk to you now. We can be talking about the fitness and your journey and how you're helping everybody. So that's awesome. Yeah. I love that you brought up POTS, though, because it seems like that is slowly becoming something that is very, not mainstream, but it is now starting to become very common knowledge, which I think is great. And so that was a great explanation of it, because we've touched on it a little bit in my educational journey so far. But so you it sounds like that's kind of going to be your main focus, or you just had a couple of those and through your research, you really like, oh, I can kind of help this.
It definitely is one that I have been drawn more towards, partly because so many in my like community have it, and partly because I feel that a lot of workouts online or even workouts even meant for people with chronic illness don't know how to take that situation of really being at risk of fainting if you know, or those heart rate spikes that can be very serious, and adapting a workout to them when you're, you know, when you're exercising, you do want your heart rate increased a certain amount, but how do we do this safely? And really that involved a lot of experimenting on myself. that's where those seated workouts I love, like, are, I try to put up like couch cardio workouts that helps be in like a safe seated environment. You know, if something were to happen, you are sitting down, or those laying down workouts and going from there. So I do like that focus. I have interest and I just want to try to help everybody with all the different things. But I think that that is one area that fear that I mentioned before is understandably there. And so I think it's one that does need to be focused on and given some attention to.
Yeah, and the way you approach it, right, with the meditation and like the mindfulness really helps with that fear. And then now you have, like you said, those four levels of whatever they can do depending on how they're feeling that day. So, I mean, you got like a well-rounded experience, which is incredible to hear.
Yeah, it's interesting to have like the personal experience with it. I find that is helpful. I'm like, okay, I think if like I can understand what they're feeling, maybe I can communicate better with them about, you know, what they can do to help themselves.
Yeah, I think that's the big key, right? Is you've had it yourself, so it's that communication, which I'm finding out is very hard to do, and it's a skill you have to develop. No matter, healthcare professionals really need to dive into communication and things like that, but it definitely can help everybody. So yeah, I think that's, I appreciate you bringing that up. That is a big aspect of it. And then I think there's a trust that comes with it, because not only do you experience it yourself and you dealt with it, you know, how now you have that trust so that when you tell them something like, oh, well, it's, you know, kind of like the old saying, it's coming from the horse's mouth in a way.
Right. I can at least say like, all right, sometimes when you go to physical therapy or we work with a trainer, it can feel like, all right, you're giving great advice, but I don't know if you really know what I'm feeling. And I feel like that does help. Like, okay, this did work for me. That doesn't mean it will still work for them, but at least someone with similar symptoms has at least had success. It can give some hope to see that success.
Yeah, and like what you're doing is so important for the person you're working with, and it's tailored to them, which is the best thing, because there's so many cookie cutter programs out there, you know, pay $15 for a PDF workout. And it's like, that's not how it works.
No, especially when you have accommodations that you really have to account for.
Yes. So how has your journey been with YouTube so far? I'm kind of curious.
It's been a learning experience. It was all me. I've never, you know, did anything like this before. And it's just been a lot of trying to figure it out as I go. But it's just been such a surprise. I didn't realize how much of a community there really was online and how you get to connect with people. And that's been so encouraging to continue doing it. For myself too, in my own healing process, you know, I still struggle with my illnesses. So it is great getting to connect with people who are going through something similar and be able to help each other.
Yeah, I think what's interesting is like you're developing this community, but at the same time, you're helping people, which is a very rare thing to be able to do.
It feels very special. It's definitely not like anything else.
Did you ever think you would do something like this, or, you know, because I know you said you got pushed by a friend to do it, but.
I always liked helping people, but I'm definitely a much more an introverted person. So putting myself out there like this is way out of my comfort zone. But it's been good for me. I feel like I've grown a lot, and I am so grateful for the amount of people I've gotten to meet. Like, I mean, even yourself, I would have, you know, just one more person to get to meet by doing this. And yeah, I'm really happy. I just want to continue.
Well, heck yeah. Can't wait to like continue to watch as you grow. Like it's cool because like we're both growing this like YouTube scene, and like, yeah, it is definitely crazy, but it's so fascinating the way you can basically kind of reach out in a way and help someone, but they could be in another country, right? And
it is. I mean, it's such a, like, even when you said that, I have like a whole bunch of friends from you know, Instagram that are in Europe, and I would never ever connected with them had it not been through this interesting environment. Even like, and that is one thing I try to keep in mind too, as much as like, oh, it sucks to like have this chronic illness, but at the same time, it has still brought some good, and without it, there's so many people that I wouldn't have connected with.
So what kind of, I would say, what area of your life has been impacted the most through like making these decisions, do you think?
Well, I mean, it definitely socially, family, friends is very impacted, because it, you know, everybody has to, I mean, it's like, one, you're putting yourself out there and seeing yourself in a new way. And my illness, of course, impacts my family and friends tremendously, and my interactions with them. And it's one, you know, it's like interesting, slightly off topic, but like, you feel very isolated when you have a chronic illness or a disability where you have to spend a lot of time alone, and you can't, you know, you miss out on a lot of events and parties and get-togethers. And so it is interesting to still have that communication and connection through social media, and at least having something. But it is definitely a tricky balance of where to dedicate your time and your energy.
Yeah, I think isolation can be hard. You know, it sounds like it.
It is. And that's part of, I think, like, I haven't been posting as much like recently, because I have been in more of a flare-up stage. You know, like, this time of year, it tends to do that. And so when I have that like a bit of energy during the day, I'm like, okay, so who do I put this energy towards? Like, you know, my clients and people to connect with, or my family and friends that are right here, and trying to decide how to use that bit of energy.
How do you kind of manage those decisions?
It's definitely just trying to strike a balance. I'm always going to put my, you know, family first and my own needs first as well. And so I try to remind myself that that's important, because otherwise you can kind of feel, I don't know if you ever get that way, I feel like the guilt of like, okay, I should be focusing on like these other people and helping them, or even just continuing to build, you know, my program or like my brain, what I'm doing here. And then try to not let that be like, okay, like you do need to take care of yourself and what's most important. Prioritizing, I'm a big one with my to-do list schedules.
No, and I love how you use the word guilty, because I think it is definitely describes how like a lot of people feel, is it feels like we have to be available for everyone and everybody. And the reality is being selfish, having to isolate, granted, you know, you're having flare-ups and things like that, but that isolation and the priority of focusing on your family puts yourself first. And then by doing that, it allows you to actually be a whole lot more present with clients and everybody else outside of that immediate family that you're focusing on. And I think that's what a lot of people don't, maybe they just don't see it that way. So I love that you brought that up.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's so true. And you do. It's like that, you have to, can't pour from an empty cup. I totally agree with that saying.
So I'm curious, how are you balancing kind of your professional life? You know, because you said you got a full-time job and then now you're working with clients. Are you finding it kind of difficult to balance all that, or have you found a way to manage it for now? And then, or do you think this will become a full-time thing in the future?
It is something that I have been so back and forth on, because the journey was so iffy in the beginning when it started, when I was still in college. And I really didn't know if I was going to make it to be able to graduate, because I had to keep taking time off from school and it didn't seem like I was going to get there. And so I was planning, you know, I wanted to make fitness and training my new kind of path. But I did manage to be able to graduate and get a job in the field that I went to school for. And so because of that, I wanted to, I guess, reward myself with actually focusing on it. Now that I accomplished it. And so for now, I am putting my focus towards my job and my career, and trying to continue more as like a secondary hobby almost, because it is very important to me and I want to continue it and continue to build it to maybe transition to down the line. But yeah, I just felt like after so many years of being everything up in the air, it kind of does feel good to be like, okay, I can focus more on something and actually get to enjoy it.
I think that's hard, right? You put your energy into something and that can make it a job. And now it's, you have like that pressure, which can be hard. But then you do something you enjoy, it's totally different.
It's true. And I'm fortunate that I do enjoy my job. Definitely has its stresses, but I'm very lucky that I feel like I landed myself a great position. And so that's also trying to make sure, again, like you said, like trying to balance everything. It is hard because I want to be there for the community that I have been building for the last several years and not abandon that, but also still being able to have like that energy to be good at what I am doing full time. I don't think I have quite found that perfect balance yet. I'm still working on that.
That's all right. So am I. So I'm right in the same boat with you. We'll figure it out together.
Yeah. Let me know if you figure out what works.
Don't sleep, drink a lot of energy. No, don't do that. Don't do any of that. Make sure prioritize yourself. That's the key. I think you get that right on the head with that one. I think that's the best way to do it, because then like we were saying, it allows you to actually be more present, which is the main thing. You know, we've been kind of talking about your life and other things, and I've enjoyed that. But I'd love to dive more in kind of the fitness aspect and like your thoughts on like why you think exercise, physical activity, whatever you want to define it as, is good for like everybody. I mean, we know it's good for everybody, but how does it play an impact in people with chronic illness?
It is so, so important. And it's the thing that a lot of people with chronic illness don't want to hear, is that exercise is still important when you don't feel like exercising. And I get it. I know what it's like to be too tired to move and in too much pain to move. I really do. But that doesn't change our body's needs. It doesn't change that, you know, we need to circulate our blood. It doesn't change the fact that we need to build muscles to protect ourselves. It doesn't change the fact that we need oxygen to support our bodies and that our cells need chances to repair and we want to make them stronger. And as someone with a chronic illness, and especially being prone to injuries because of that, I realize how important muscle building is. I realize how important heart health is, as there are many chronic illnesses that if you have them, you do become at a higher risk of developing heart disease. So knowing the risks that can occur by not exercising, it does become very important to continue to, even when you're not feeling up for it or like you don't have the energy. And that doesn't mean that you should be pushing yourself to where you're feeling worse because you're doing it. That's where those mindful, slow exercises where you really listen to your body become so vital.
You have like set breathing exercises you teach people to like do to kind of really help them rein everything back in, kind of calm down that sympathetic nervous system that's probably kind of being overactive at that time?
I do. So this is where my background in energy healing and energy work I find becomes very relevant. Is there are certain breathing exercises or even just visuals where you are kind of picturing the light or energy passing through your body that helps you bring awareness to those different parts, can be helpful to start to feel those things. And breathing, where you're really working, you know, your abdomen and making it a little more of an active breath than something that is passive, can help introduce into those. You know, I do like a lot of like extensions and contractions to start to really be able to mindfully move your muscles and feel what it feels like when something is engaged versus relaxed. So teaching those basics. And then I also went through a program. It's called the Dynamic Neural Retraining System, DNRS. And it has literally changed my life, because it taught me about your limbic system and how our nervous system is impacted by trauma or traumas like becoming very ill or going through an accident, or you become disabled, and what happens in your brain. going through all of that and how that change in your limbic system can make you feel worse when you're doing certain movements. And that really brings in that feeling of not being safe. And so learning how to regulate my limbic system is part of what helped me be able to start running again, even though I have all those POTS symptoms. And learning, like, okay, reteaching your brain that our bodies are designed for movement. That's something I always try to impress upon people, is like, we are designed to move. We're not designed to lay down or stay still all the time. Like, it is safe to move. That's what our bodies were meant to do. And so really retraining our brains to believe that is an important step if you're chronically ill.
Yeah, I think that actually applies to everybody. You know, just because there's so much stress in the world that I think people don't realize how impactful that is, especially because you brought up the nervous system, which I'm so glad you did, because that's like the big component, right? When you have like the, you know, if you break it down to the autonomic nervous system for the sympathetic, which is fight or flight, and then you have the parasympathetic, which is the rest and digest, which is simple terms everybody can understand and relate to. And that's really interesting how like you went through that course and learned all the information, and now you're teaching people how to like calm down and you're using the breath work. But you did mention, you know, you use more of an active versus passive. Could you kind of elaborate or explain that a little bit so like someone listening understands the difference?
Absolutely. So when you are, for example, if we're doing like a seated or a lying down workout, there'll be times that I'll like say like, okay, let's, you know, feel our muscles, like I'll say in our legs. And so, you know, and when we're relaxed, we might just notice them and feel the weight, what it feels like when they're against, you know, the chair or the bed. And then to become active in that, let's engage those muscles. So contract them, squeeze them together. Okay, now what does it feel like? Do you feel the pain? Do you feel a stretch? And release them again. And it does work. Even though it's such a gentle movement, a very, very small movement, it is still engaging those muscles, and you can continue to work them. And you can even tire yourself out, depending on how you're feeling that day, just by doing those simple contractions and releases. So I do the same thing with breathing. Like, okay, let's put our hands on our abdomen. Let's really feel it expand. And then when we contract, we kind of give it a hold and feel those muscles in your abdomen tighten, and what that feels like to be engaged and to release that again and feel that relaxed difference. And it is still it still is working those muscles. We're using them. And it actually kind of helps also even teach us what our muscles are doing all the time, that we are using them when we aren't actively like working out or thinking about it. Like, there is a lot of movement that goes into just our daily lives, or even just keeping us in an upright posture. And becoming, you know, aware of that and supporting our bodies in doing those simple movements that get us through the day.
Yeah, I love how you brought up the fact that like the muscles like sustain a specific amount of contraction for postural stuff and like daily activities. That's a beautiful thing. I'm so glad you like mentioned that, because I think that's something a lot of people don't understand. And I think it also doesn't get explained a lot, because what we're talking about, like it is related to chronic illness. Like, I do agree with that, but I think everything you're saying can also be applied to everybody, you know, especially when you brought up the traumatic events. It's like people in car accidents, like breathing exercises really help, like I said, calm down that nervous system, kind of relax everything. And then you take it a step further, which is really cool, because now you're like, focus on your body, let's go inward and contract these muscles, which in turn gets the blood flowing using the muscle pump, which is what movement does. Yeah, this is awesome. We're nerding out right now. This is great. So something I think I really love to dive in, because we're talking a lot of stuff about fitness and stuff. You brought up something that was really important to me that I think I would like to hear your perspective on, is kind of communicating to people, right? Because you said people with chronic illness are tired, they don't want to move. And so you kind of have to break this barrier to persuade them, because you care about them, to do these things. And I'm kind of curious, like, how you can communicate that And do you think it might be a little bit easier for you to do that because you are also have chronic illness and stuff like that versus someone, you know, as a future physical therapist working with someone that would be in your shoes?
You know, I think we both have an equal opportunity to connect with people and persuade them. I think what people with chronic illness tend to look for, you know, myself included, is just someone who validates that what they're feeling is legitimate. So whether that is coming from someone who knows what they're going through firsthand or someone who knows what they're going through based on working with people who have had similar experiences, just having someone be able to acknowledge that, yes, you are experiencing something real. Even if you don't know what it is yet, what you're feeling, your symptoms, like this is real. And it's okay that you feel this way. And like, we're going to try to help get through it anyway, the best that we can. I think that validation is an important step. I know what it's like to be told it's just in your head or it's just anxiety or, you know, you're crazy. And that's something that unfortunately a lot of people in the chronic illness community hear quite often. So having someone acknowledge that, I think, is an important step to build in trust between that kind of client-patient relationship. And I do think, yes, it helps that I can say, okay, I have been through this and I am going through this. But, you know, through these steps, I was able to make improvement. I think that's encouraging. People like that ability to see hope, because you can definitely lose hope when something is chronic and there's no cure for it. And it's like, well, what are we even doing if it's not going to get any better? But even if you have something that's going to be a lifelong illness or disability, there is still a wonderful quality of life that you can maintain if you take the steps to do so. And I think so trying to lead by example and trying to do the best I can to show, you know, I put up my formal posts and videos, but also I try to be very informal on my stories and be very honest of like, this is what I'm doing today. Or I couldn't do this today because I'm not feeling well, and showing that truthful, honest, you know, vulnerable side as well. So, you know, we don't want to make it seem like, okay, we're going to be perfect all the time and we're going to work out all the time, because it's just not reality for anybody. Whether you have an illness or not, things come up and you have to know that that's okay. And you just start again the next day.
Yeah, I think that authenticity again is, you know, why you're able to connect with everybody that's, you know, not only following your Instagram, so like that, but the clients you're working with.
It is an important part. And I think even, you know, if you're someone who's going to be working with patients and maybe not have that firsthand experience yourself, being, you know, just authentically yourself too, it's a great way to connect, knowing like, okay, no matter what, none of us are going to be perfect all the time. If you are, that's fantastic. But for the most part, well, you know, at the very least, some of us are always going to get sick from here and, you know, get a cold or something from time to time and not want to work out. And that's all right. And to just have that, you know, that validation that it's okay to be, you know, imperfect. Still can make progress.
Yeah, and then I like the fact that you're, you know, you said validating the fact that something's wrong, they just don't know what it is. And then from the healthcare perspective, it's like, all right, yeah, you know, it's not this. Instead of like quickly jumping to something to try and label it, even if you feel like you need to. But that's definitely a conversation for another day. But I'm glad we really touched on it, you know, because it is important that people, I think it's healthcare community and I think it's the fitness community, because you're starting to see a rise in people in the fitness industry that are working with everyone. That includes people with some form of amputation or spinal cord injury and stuff like that, which is, I love seeing, honestly. I think it's so great because I'm such a big believer in exercise and movement, and have been even before physical therapy, and just to see what it does. So yeah, that's why I kind of do this podcast, and that's why I'm really just loving this entire conversation, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I am too. And I think from a physical therapy standpoint, like you mentioned, sometimes you can feel like you want there to be a label, but even when there's not, it is important to still be able to make accommodations for the person, even if you don't know exactly what's going on. And I think that's where that mindfulness and being able to listen to your body again becomes just so important, to be able to communicate. If you're working with a physical therapist or a trainer, you want to be able to communicate effectively about how you're feeling and how the different exercises impact your body, if they're positively or negatively. And then being on the other side of that,
If you're the one working with the patient, being able to hear that feedback and do something with it to help them.
Yeah, and I think it boils down to that advocating for yourself and then putting your foot down, like, hey, something, whether it's something's not right or I'm not feeling those exercises we've been doing, and I change it up. And then, like you said, it's on the other end where the, you know, trainer, therapist is like, okay, yeah, let's do that. And that right there just breeds a better relationship and connection for the client and the trainer.
Yeah, I think that again, and that just continues to build that positive relationship with them. So they feel even more encouraged, like, okay, even though this exercise didn't work for me, it doesn't mean I need to stop everything. There's still something else I can do. I can accommodate this. And to Mikey said, being that advocate for yourself is so important.
It's important, but it also is hard, I'm sure.
It is. It definitely is, especially when you're trying to be, and then you get that backlash of, well, that's in your head because they can't see it, or there's no, you know, your tests are fine, so there must be nothing wrong. It does become a challenge to keep advocating for yourself, but there is always those people that will listen. And so you do just want to, you want to keep going as hard as it is.
Do you think things are getting a little bit better in that aspect as far as like finding, whether it be, like we said, healthcare practitioners or, you know, trainers that are actually more adept at listening and understanding, and it's like becoming common knowledge, like, oh, okay, something's going on here, and then kind of seeing that? Or do you think it's happening too slow still?
You know, I wish it could happen faster, but I understand that it's hard to change an entire system. But I do think that with newer healthcare practitioners, I am seeing a more awareness and positivity in that way. And I think part of it really is through people sharing their stories. Social media really helps us connect and learn more. I mean, there's so much that I have learned that I didn't know anything about in terms of different illnesses or disabilities out there and treatments. And I know that if I'm seeing these, you know, these posts and these videos that other health, like healthcare practitioners who are, you know, also looking for those kinds of things are seeing them too. And I, you know, 7 years ago, even when I started trying to get a diagnosis, there was no talk of some of these conditions. And now this year, I'm hearing them kind of flying left and right with my own like healthcare team, with new people that I've been working with. And that's very, very exciting. That it just seems like there is more education happening and more awareness being brought to these issues.
What's it like to be kind of at the forefront to see that change?
It's very hopeful. It definitely, I mean, just by, well, really, it's written like there's some physical therapists and even like functional practitioners that I follow on Instagram that they, through their posts, like they're very educational. I was able to learn like, oh, I think I have this condition. And I was able to find someone to meet with about it. And sure enough, I did, and was able to start treatment for it. And that really was exciting. Like, okay, if it wasn't for all this awareness being raised, I wouldn't have known any of this. And I wouldn't have gotten connected with these people. And that was also through like conversations with people like in my daily life, through coworkers. They're like, oh yeah, I know this. Like, you should look into that. And it was encouraging. And these were conversations that just a few years ago, like, I was not hearing people have. So yeah, it's definitely an exciting thing to see that there is some positive change taking place.
Yeah, I think credit has to be given to people such as yourself. They're, you know, making it common knowledge and talking about it, which can be scary, like you said, getting into that YouTube space. And like, I know I was scared, like, starting to post on social media and stuff like that. But I can see that maybe, not the isolation, but maybe feel like an outcast per se. Not saying that's how it is, but like, if you have that thought process, and then it makes it even scarier to put yourself out there.
I definitely felt that way in the beginning. And even still, sometimes it's like, okay, what, you know, I'm like, should I share this? It's very personal. Like, you know, what I'm going through is not, it's not pretty. So like, do people really want to hear this? And I just think about myself and what I have gained from others who were sharing those very personal parts of their lives with others, and how I'm getting in a better place with my own health because of them. And I I do. I think it's worth it. I know for some people it can be like, well, why would you share something so private like that publicly? But if it's going to help even one person, then I definitely think that it's worth it. And I know that there have been plenty of times, like I said, that I've been that person that was helped. So I do think it's important to just kind of be brave. And then it is helpful for myself to be able to share my story. And then that is, you know, a little healing emotionally too. But then to still be able to help others in their healing journey is so worth it.
What do you think makes it healing to be able to like put yourself out there? I know you know you are helping people, but you said it's kind of self-healing. So I'm kind of curious what you meant by that.
Yeah, I think part of that isolation we talked about and that lack of validation, there's just been too many times that both appointment, like with doctors, but also family and friends, basically being written off as being anxious or dramatic or looking for attention. And it feels very isolating and upsetting and lonely. And so being able to actually share my story and what I've been going through that people don't see otherwise, and then hear from others going through the same thing, that there is a connection being made there. And it helps me to know that I'm not the only person going through this. And I'm not crazy, because this unfortunately is a little more common than I had thought.
Yeah, I think it just right there just shows the power of community and how it can change not only your life, but others.
Absolutely.
And it just shows that we need it. You know, and I think that's, I think what's cool with social media is allowing people to create their own communities. And that's not something you would find 10 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, it does really allow you to create the community that you need, because that might not be the people that are physically around you, but there might be people across the world from you that can really give you the advice or, you know, connection that you're looking for.
You said that things are starting to become more common, right? You know, as far as information out there, and, you know, you discovered it. You think it's because social media, or you think it's because more and more people in that space are starting to use social media as a tool to help things be discovered?
I think it's a bit of both. I think that there are more people who are going through the experiences that are opening up and sharing them, which gets other people thinking about it and talking about it. And then I definitely do see an increase in, you know, healthcare practitioners and scientists that are educating the public using social media. And so a lot more people are gaining access to this information and knowledge that they might not have stumbled across on their own otherwise.
So what are you kind of hopeful for in the future regarding, you know, what we're talking about?
I hope that awareness continues to grow about, you know, these invisible illnesses and chronic conditions in general. I hope that more healthcare practitioners open themselves up to a new way of thinking, of really trusting what their patients are saying first and viewing them as human first, to be able to not just write something off as, you know, anxiety, but like, okay, let's say they are anxious. Why? What is causing this anxiety, or what is causing, you know, this depression that they're experiencing when they're talking about the pain or the fatigue that they're having? I do hope that we continue to see a trend of looking for the real cause behind the whole slew of symptoms that are presented.
Yeah, I can speak for the program I'm in. I'm seeing it become very patient-oriented and, you know, kind of front forward of like listening, understanding, being empathetic. And I do see the change, and I'm sure it's happening in other medical professions too, but I just can't speak to it. But yeah, and I do believe it will happen. I mean, because you're seeing a lot of like functional practitioners take to social media and starting to work with people, and right there is just, yeah, definitely a trend that will keep on going, I'm sure.
I hope so. And that's good to hear. Yeah, hopefully it's some positive peer influence that way. The more we see others doing it, that hopefully can keep reflecting on ourselves and our interactions with patients or clients.
Oh yeah, I'm sure it is. I'm an optimist, so I believe it'll happen. But this conversation has been great, by the way, but I really just kind of want to nerd out some more. And I'm so curious, like, what's been the most fascinating thing you learned during like your energy healing and that DNRS and stuff like that? I'm really curious to kind of dive into that a little bit.
it's also interesting. I just love the brain and how the brain works. I really didn't know about how when like our external stimuli goes through our brain and either gets triggered as being a threat or being triggered as just it's safe, it's okay, and how after you go through something traumatic, if it's not processed fully through your body and this normal like systems that we have in place to process trauma, that any stimuli that comes your way can start being triggered as this is not safe, this is not safe, this is not safe. And that impacted, you know, me a lot because I all of a sudden developed like all these allergies and intolerances to things that I never had an issue with before. And it was really learning about that that opened up my eyes of like, oh, like this is causing, you know, my heart rate to spike. This is causing me to have what feels like an allergic reaction because I have these unresolved traumas in my body. And so now everything that's coming through is being triggered as like, this is not safe. And it's just your body's way of trying to protect you. And that also really helped me to realize like, oh, I don't need to hate myself for having all these problems all of a sudden, but I can actually love and appreciate my body for how hard it's trying to protect me. And that's an important part of calming those systems down and resetting your nervous system. So it's just so enlightening to learn about the nervous system.
I think that's the greatest description, is like being thankful for a body that like loves you so much. It's trying to protect you. And so it's sending these signals to amplify that fight or flight because like it is trying to protect you and save you. I've never heard of it explained that way. And I think that was just beautiful. I love that. I'm going to steal that, by the way.
Absolutely. Please do. Cause yeah, it changed my life thinking about it like that. I think it's so easy to get caught up in, you know, if you're injured or you're sick, it's not like your body, or you've got allergies, and it's like, well, why am I having a problem when nobody else does? And yeah, being able to look at it like that and know that your body just wants the best for you, I think it's a really impactful thing to realize and come to learn.
Was that like knowledge you acquired through that training, or was it something you kind of stumbled upon?
That was through that DNRS program that I really learned about those processes and how that happens. And then learning more about, I have fibromyalgia. And so that's a very similar system that takes place, in that your pain signals get, you know, they're just not functioning correctly with, okay, like this hurts. So now everything around my body, like there's different things firing because of that fibromyalgia. And it's just the same way. I'm like, this pain is trying to protect me. I don't understand why, but it is. And so I can recognize that, you know, I just need to listen to my body and give it a chance to relax and just thank it for what it's doing.
Yeah. Pain is so fascinating and so interesting, but it's like the most misunderstood thing as far as like the public, right? It's not the public's fault or society's fault. It's because they don't have that education or haven't been exposed to it. And I don't think it's been talked about enough yet, but I've slowly started to see like pain being talked about like on podcasts and, you know, social media and stuff like that. And like our class was incredible when it came to like talking about pain and like how it affects and certain things kind of come into play. And or the big thing was like the internal environment versus the external environment, right? And then how you have receptors, but then you bring up the brain, which is like the biggest impact of pain. So yeah, it's all very fascinating.
Yes, it just makes me want to learn more.
Oh yeah. Are you like currently trying to learn more, write stuff about things like this?
You know, it is always something I'm trying to at least self-educate on. I would love to really take more, you know, in-depth like courses or classes to learn more about the body and the function, especially the nervous system. It just seems to have such a big impact. And it seems to, I mean, it does impact everybody. And so I do think it's important. I hope that it becomes more public, like just common knowledge, these things.
Yeah, I think currently, and you have to look at like our generation versus a generation that is now starting to retire. Things like when you say energy healing, they just think voodoo, which I mean, that's just the reality of the situation. And then you have people like, I was in those shoes where like I would hear energy healing and I would think voodoo too.
Me too.
But then you dive in and you get that understanding and that knowledge and you're like, oh, okay. And then I think that's where we as advocates or people that have that education, it's our duty to get that information out there so people understand it. And then now you will, that's why you're starting to see so many functional medicine people are talking about exercise, you know, as a way to not cure things, but help comorbidities and things like that.
Yeah, I think you're so right. It is important to just kind of get out there and, you know, spread the word and like energy healing. Absolutely. First thing people think is like, oh, this is just crazy. And I was the same way. But once it, you know, you have it done to you or you try it yourself and you can feel the difference, always like it doesn't really matter if it makes perfect sense. If it's helping, it's helping. You know, if something's going to help my pain or help me sleep, then it's safe and not going to hurt me, then I'm for it.
What was your first experience like when you went through your first time?
I did not like it the first time. I was so freaked out because I could feel that energy moving as the person was working on me. I'm like, this is the weirdest thing. Like, I'm actually getting a little anxious. But then after the fact, I could feel that calm and that kind of lower amount of pain. I'm like, okay, this is kind of interesting. And then had it done more times after that. And each time it just felt better and better. And it becomes quite intense. And the more you have it done, the more you can really feel that energy in your body. And I think that once people can feel that, you start to see that it is a real thing, even though we can't see it or fully explain it. We can feel it. And so we kind of know that it's there and it's doing something.
Did you say it actually decreased some of your pain?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I won't say that it fully takes my pain away, but it definitely, I think it does help lower and it does help lower inflammation. And I think that helps. And oh my goodness, you usually get such a good night's sleep afterwards.
Yeah. To kind of like highlight hypnotherapy, right? Like I actually saw I used to work as a tech and like we had a patient get hypnotherapy for some stuff she had going on. And it's just because you brought up being tired and like she came in after one of those sessions and she was just like falling asleep in a chair. I was like, uh-oh, this is not going to be an active session.
That's a cool experience that you got to work there.
Yeah. So when you was at like a typical physical therapy office and it was a young athlete that had a short symptomatic neurological issue is the best way to describe it. And what happened, long story short, is she lost voluntary control of one arm and both legs. And everybody, you know, they went to all the specialists and things like that. And then finally, someone suggested they go to hypnotherapy. They did it. And within two sessions, she could kind of wiggle her finger and the arm that wasn't working. And this was after seeing us for a couple weeks. And then within a couple of sessions, she was back up and walking. And that's it's incredible to see. And so I like to tell that story because it's such a profound statement of how much control the mind has and how vital of a role it has in everything, which is why I loved at the beginning when you brought up the mindfulness and how like that's one thing you utilize with your clients. And I think it's important.
Absolutely. That is an incredible story. And I think it does, like you said, it just shows that impact of the nervous system and our brains on everything with our autonomic nervous system and then just our active movement and every part of it, really. I mean, that rest and digest too. I think that that's another thing with energy healing I found very effective was with my digestive system, issues with that, with my illness. And I find it so impacted by that. And I think I hear it come around now. I'm like, oh, your digestive tract is like your second brain. And it's true. It's just like they are such a close connection. So all of it really does like kind of have such a close relationship with each other.
Yeah, it's that super highway, the vagus nerve that just runs from the top to the bottom. It's a crazy thing.
That's so interesting.
So I love kind of asking everybody this question. And so I'm going to ask it for you. And sometimes it's a little bit tough. But what kind of legacy do you want to leave behind?
That's a good question. And I really just want to bring hope to others and help as many people as I can before I go.
That's a sweet and simple answer. I love it. Kira, thank you so much for spending an hour with us this evening and chit-chatting. I've enjoyed this entire conversation. It's been so insightful, and I've definitely learned a lot, and now I have even more things to go explore, which is always great. I love it. And yeah, again, I can't thank you so much. And moving forward, I'm sure people can follow you on Instagram and follow you on YouTube, and we'll definitely put those links out there, but I'd love for you to kind of do a shout-out as well.
Absolutely, we'll do. And thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed our conversation, and I look forward to hopefully getting to talk to you again soon.
Definitely. We'll have to shoot another episode, 100%.
We'd love to.